Of course, Chinese were some of the earliest migrants here in the Gold Rush days. They've been a great migrant cohort. But what about people who come here to study high-tech defence stuff and go back to China? And now to China. It's always there and it's getting bigger. And there are security questions that we ask about China. Recently, ASPE produced a paper, Picking Flowers, Making Honey. It's an expression used by a very senior person in China. And we need to find out what that means as it relates to our security. And to do that, we're going to talk to Alex Joske. He's a research fellow at the International Cyber Policy Centre at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. Alex Joske, welcome to Counterpoint.
Good to be here.
So the Chinese military are out there cooperating with everyone, aren't they, all around the world?
Yeah, that's right. We've really seen quite an unexpected rise in the Chinese military's collaboration with universities outside of China. And it's really quite marked in Australia. But across the world, we've probably seen about 2,500 Chinese military scientists and engineers go overseas to study advanced technologies and then go back to China to, in the PLA's words, pick flowers to make honey.
So they take something back with them, don't they? Some understanding about, even if it's not the exact technology, it's an understanding of where we are, where we're headed, how far we have progressed down a particular path. Now, all this collaboration, it seems to have a focus, doesn't it, on the Five Eyes countries?
I think it's a focus more generally on countries that are technologically advanced and that encompasses the Five Eyes countries in particular. Mm-hmm. So the top countries around the world for this collaboration with the Chinese military are the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, and Germany. So it really is concentrated in these countries that share intelligence and share a lot of military technology, but are also on the cutting edge of scientific research.
Mm. In the paper, you show that the number of peer-reviewed articles co-authored by People's Liberation Army scientists with overseas scientists between 2006 and 2017 went from 112 in 2006 up to 734 in 2017. It's a reasonable jump, isn't it?
It's really quite marked, you know, sevenfold increase. And it's something that simply hasn't been discussed sort of by the broader public to date. And that's why I've put out this paper to try to spark a discussion to really get people to think about, you know, the Chinese military is sending so many scientists overseas and engaging in so much collaboration with our universities. And we haven't yet talked about whether that's in our national interest or whether it raises security concerns.
Now, the University of New South Wales and the Australian National University are in the top 10 for this cooperation with PLA scientists. But the University of New South Wales, I understand their Deputy Vice-Chancellor, is quite confident that all their intellectual property is pretty safe.
I think that's probably hard to say at this point, but I think the real concerns raised by UNSW's collaboration with the Chinese military, primarily in the fact that they're training a generation of Chinese military scientists in advanced areas of technology like navigation systems, unmanned aircraft, and supercomputers. So it's not just these questions of is technology being stolen, but simply the contribution that's being made mm-hmm. to the military technology of China is concerning in itself.
Mm. So you've done this research and brought together the information about, well, what's happening internationally and a good deal about what's happening in Australia. Prior to that, do you think the universities are talking to each other and mapping so that we all understand what sort of cooperation from Australia we have with the PLA at the very high-tech level in universities?
I'm not really sure how much discussion is happening inside Australian universities about this. I'm sure they're trying to kind of respond to media queries, but it's not clear whether they've actually come together and tried to fully assess the extent of collaboration with the Chinese military on their campuses. And I don't think they've come together to work out specific responses to it. In my research, I tried to meet with the Australian National University about my research into Chinese military collaboration, but couldn't secure a meeting and was referred to the Group of Eight, the representative body for Australia's top eight universities, which also didn't have the time to meet with me. So I think this really reflects a lack of willingness by a lot of universities to come out publicly and openly and actually discuss these issues.
Well, it's an important issue, and if they haven't decided to meet amongst themselves and have a discussion about it, I don't think it'll be too long before they have to, before the public demand that they do. I mean, just where some of these scientists go as visiting scholars is interesting, but where do they come from, these scientists? What sort of institutions are they therefore going back to?
The Chinese military has quite a substantial network of its own universities and research institutes across China. And the main source of these scientists coming to study in places like ANU and UNSW is called the National University of Defense Technology, which is the Chinese military's top science and technology university. But we've also seen people come from, for example, the Chinese military's Information Engineering University, which conducts cyber attacks and trains signals intelligence officers. We've seen people go overseas from places like Northwestern Institute of Nuclear Technology, which forms part of China's nuclear program. So they really come from quite a wide range of Chinese military institutions, doing things like hypersonic missiles, supercomputer technology, intelligence gathering, and even nuclear weapons.
I'm talking with Alex Joski. He's a research fellow at ASPE, and in particular, the International Cyber Policy Centre. We're talking about the Chinese coming here to pick flowers and going home and making honey. And we've read in plenty of places, really, that the Chinese do expect loyalty to China from people to travel abroad. I don't feel too badly about that because, you know, we expect our citizens to be loyal to us, don't we? Put Australia sort of first. But in any event, that does raise concerns when you have so many scientists coming to Australia from these sorts of places and then returning home. Are you aware of whether any of our intelligence agencies are focusing on this aspect of Chinese involvement in Australia?
No, it's not clear because our intelligence agencies aren't really public about what kind of work they're doing. But I think we can see from the current review of the Defence Trade Controls Act, Defence's submission to it seemed to be driven by serious concerns about technology transfer to China. It wasn't named, but it was likely a key driver in this submission to the Defence Trade Controls Act. So I think there is at least interest in government in trying to think about these problems. With the question of the loyalty of these scientists, the Chinese military seems careful to only send Chinese Communist Party members overseas who are then required to report back on their thoughts while they're overseas and maintain links back to the Chinese military and abide by discipline standards. And these all contribute to making sure that they all return to China once they've finished their studies overseas. The National University of Defense Technology even claims that 100% of the students it's sent overseas have come back to China on time.
Well, as a former immigration minister, I can tell you there are a number of ways you can get people to go back on time, but let's not get into that. Let's look at a case study of Hu Xiaosheng that might give an example to all of us how people go overseas and study, might be looking at wind energy research, but what's the story of Hu Xiaosheng?
So Hu Xiaosheng did his PhD at a place called the Rocket Force Engineering University in China, which specializes in the development of missiles for the Chinese military. But in around, I think, if I remember correctly, 2014, he went to Norway, funded by a Norwegian government wind energy research grant. And while he was in Norway, however, he claimed to be from a place called the Xi'an Research Institute of High Technology, which seems to just be a cover for the Rocket Force Engineering University. And when he was in Norway, he was writing not about wind energy, but about hypersonic aircraft. And hypersonic aircraft and missiles is an area where China and the US are really competing for dominance. It's a sort of a developing technology that will probably change the landscape of warfare because it would allow countries to send missiles at incredible speeds right across the globe.
Five times the speed of sound.
That's right, over five times. And after spending about a year or two in Norway, it seems like the Norwegian authorities cottoned on to what was going on not long before he was supposed to go back to China anyway and ended up expelling him from the country.
Well, there's one example at least. Well, I have to say this is a very, very interesting paper and it's an interesting topic. I mean, in Australia we talk, as you know, about Chinese people coming to buy apartments and pushing the price of houses up, and, you know, so many Chinese being here, and some people worry about that, buying agricultural land. It doesn't worry me. I like Chinese people to extent that these days that we're allowed to have ethnic preferences. I think the Chinese have a great sense of humour and are lovely people to mix with. But nonetheless, we do have to watch our own national security, and I don't think this aspect is something that we've had much of a public discussion about. So Alex Joski from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, in particular the International Cyber Policy Centre, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.